When did you come into social work then, Mary?
Well, I qualified in 42. And in those days, there was nothing that we would now call a training course.
Yes.
It was largely sitting by Nelly.
Yes.
So I suppose I started training, if that's what you're interested in 40.
Yes.
I remember that I was rather unusual in that I was selected before I took my social science diploma.
Yes.
Now, most students were selected afterwards.
Yes.
And I never quite knew why this was. It may have been to do with money, because money was tight. Yes. And I think probably in those days one's parents were involved, as they wouldn't be today. And I think probably something was said that if I wasn't going to be selected, I couldn't spend 2 years doing a social science diploma. And I was selected by a committee in Leeds, because in those days the Institute of Armoners had one or two regional committees.
I see.
So I didn't have to come up to London, and I was selected. I remember a quite large selection committee sitting around a table. No kind of tea fight or anything like that. That came later.
Yes.
But I was simply selected on interview.
Yes.
And told that if I got the diploma, I would be all right.
Yes.
So then I started in on the 2 year diploma at Leeds. Yes.
Well, was that straight from school, or?
No, I at school I managed to get the right number of credits in school certificate, but not in the right subjects. To get matric exemption.
Yes.
So I went to the local technical college at Huddersfield.
Yes.
And took London matric direct as an exam.
Yes.
And discovered that it was a great deal more difficult than getting exemption through school certificate.
Yes.
So that I'd had a year there working for matric between leaving school.
Yes.
And then I went straight to Leeds.
So you're quite young then, when you were accepted.
Well, no, I've just realised I had one more year after I took my trick. Mm. I worked for one more year with a view to taking an arts degree.
I see, yes.
And then that began to appear pretty pointless because I didn't know what I was going to do with it anyway.
Yes.
And it was at that point really that I had wanted to do medicine rather badly. And there never was enough money for that as a possibility.
Yes.
And I think I was a bit lost. But I did know I wanted to work in a hospital.
Yes.
And really, I think it came about almost accidentally that I heard of what was then called almoning.
Yes.
And it sounded interesting.
Yes.
But it wasn't, at that stage, really seen, in a sense, as social work predominantly. It was seen as being in a hospital and very oriented that way at the time. So then I did the social science diploma. And that must have been 'Perhaps dates aren't important, but what I've remembered is that the war broke out, which makes it was 39.
It was a 2 year course, you said?
Yes, so I must have. Well, of course, it was a little bit more than that, than 2 years, wasn't it? Because there was the social science diploma for 2 years, and then some practical on top of that.
Yes.
I was getting confused as to why I didn't qualify until June 42, you see?
Yes.
But of course, it wasn't 2 years, it was more than that.
Yes.
So that I must have started at Leeds before that, because I distinctly remember that I did part of my practical, because in those days you had to do, well, someone else will tell you the exact amount, but you had to do some work with an organisation similar to the COS in London.
Yes.
Now, most people came to London, but the war broke out, And in the September that I was due to come, and so I was allowed to go to Liverpool rather than to London, because it was felt that perhaps the family wouldn't want me up in the Blitz and so on. So I went and did, I think, probably 2 months with the PSS in Liverpool with Miss Deed. And a friend who'd done the course with me at Leeds, we both went to the PSS at the same time. And one of the things I remember was being absolutely petrified after, from a rather sort of sheltered background, at large in Liverpool. And because of the war, we weren't even allowed any street maps of any kind. So the mere fact of setting out on the first day to find the offices of the PSS was quite an ordeal. We were sharing digs, which made it a little easier, the two of us, 4 miles out of Liverpool, on a tram ride, I remember. But what I do remember is that on the first day, we were, my friend and I were both given four visits each to do in differing parts of Liverpool. Not the faintest idea how to set about it at all. Never had seen tenement flats and so on, such as we had to go to. And we were both so scared that we both did the eight visits together. But this fact, unfortunately, was discovered. And we were sent then to separate offices so that this couldn't happen. But I do remember a certain amount of drama. I remember being very scared when I witnessed my first street fight in Pitt Street. I mean, these were the days when the policemen went together up Scotland Road. But social work students went on their own, you know. And I'm ashamed to say that, that I was so petrified on witnessing this fight that I decided discretion was the better part of valour and I ran for my life. I did do some training in London. But that was really very patchy and desultory. I think I was meant to work in a settlement. In fact, I was meant to work at Mary Ward House, I recollect. But then, you see, nobody having told me anything about the geography of London, I'd arranged to stay with relatives out at Wembley. And when I just plainly refused to work at Mary Ward settlement in the evenings. And this, I think, was quite a black mark. Which lived with me for quite a bit. I didn't discover this until later, but not being willing to work in a settlement in the evenings was definitely not the right approach to have for a future social worker. But, I, you know, at the time, I didn't even know what a settlement was. And you really were just thrown in to find out. And, you know, this was no doubt good for us. But I'm not sure that some of the experience couldn't have been much more constructively used if one had had a bit more understanding about what it was about in the first place. Well, after that, I mean, that was... I mean, the social science diploma looked after itself. That wasn't any particular problem. Then we had this bit of practical training. But I think I ought to put in this that I was with the first group of students who had the beginnings of the Institute's training other than just a sitting by Nelly training. It was held in Leeds, possibly because of the war. And I can't remember the exact length, but I think it was about 6 weeks. Which we had as a group of future medical social workers, and it consisted of, in the main, of lectures on various topics. I remember lectures from a paediatrician. I remember lectures, or a series of lectures, to make sure, believe it or not, that we really knew the facts of life. very delicately put, I recollect.
Yes.
And perhaps I'd better not go into too much detail about that. But I do remember the very, very maternal,
yes,
a nice woman doctor,
yes,
who broke very gently to us, yes, some of the more distressing things that we might come across in the course of the job.
Yes.
Well, then it was a matter of getting one's first job. I mean, perhaps you might like to know that that in those days, if students looked as if they were, you know, not doing very well in a placement,
mm-hmm,
it was possible to change, as indeed it still is, I presume, and that there were some fairly well-known, rather alarming head medical social workers, because in those days there weren't people designated in any way as student supervisors.
Yes.
I mean, you went to the hospital,
yes,
and it was the head medical social worker, and you would usually, certainly in my case, you went round each department for a few weeks.
Yes.
I mean, I don't know how much more you want on training. I had,
yes, yes.
I trained in, I think I must have had about 5 or 6 placements.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly, I remember 2 in Leeds,
mm-hmm,
but not consecutive. 1 at the local authority hospital.
Mm-hmm.
That was an experience in itself. I mean, in those days, students had very little status.
Is that St James's? Yeah.
And I recollect very clearly, it took 2 or 3 days before I realised why there was a sudden disappearance of all the almoners round about 11:15,
yes,
into the room of the head almoner,
yes,
before I discovered that they all went in there for coffee,
yes,
but not the student. The student was sent down the road to the local patisserie,
yes,
to buy cream cakes and things,
cool,
of which you didn't participate. You just handed them in. That was quite a scary experience, that particular placement, with a rather formidable lady, one Miss Newling. Well, then from there, not so long ago.
Hmm.
I think anyway, the order doesn't,
yes,
matter. I also went to Leeds Infirmary,
yes,
for a quite long placement there,
yes,
where, and what I remember most, I suppose, about that one was the head almoner there who kept her hat on all day.
Hmm.
A very eminent lady, wore a beige overall and a large brimmed straw hat. And I was in trouble on the very first day there because I'd understood that students in those days wore blue overalls, at any rate in that hospital, and I went out and bought myself a really rather snazzy blue overall,
mm,
with sort of scalloped collar,
yes,
and waisted,
yes,
and felt no end of anything in it. And on my arrival was told to take it off, and that what was needed was a perfectly ordinary plain blue overall with takeout buttons. That was the end of that.
So, did you have to buy your own overalls? I didn't realise that.
Yes, in those days.
Oh, I thought,
no, we bought our own.
Mm-hmm.
But they had to conform to suitable,
yeah,
thing. The other thing, I spent a good deal of time in the diabetic clinic, I remember, on that placement. But out of all that, I suppose one of the most idiotic but things that remains with me was that we had to have gas mask drill.
Yes.
And trying to establish rapport, I don't think it was called a casework relationship in those days,
yes,
but any sort of rapport with a worried student, worried client, with a gas mask on, took quite a bit of doing, especially if you wore spectacles, as I did. And you know, either you couldn't get the thing on because of the spectacles, or you took the spectacles off and then I couldn't see the patient.
Yes.
But not an awful lot remains of these, this, that experience.
Can I just ask you if there was any teaching about, I don't know, things like interviewing, I mean, how you went about doing the job?
No, you watched.
It was just Nelly watching?
Yes, you watched Nelly, and I wouldn't want actually to in any way depreciate that.
Yes.
I think it had an awful lot to offer.
Yes. Yes.
Occasionally, I remember if there was a very tricky interview being set up, I was sent next door where I could hear the interview over the partition.
Oh, yes.
There were no questions in those days about the ethics.
No.
That there might reasonably have been
about
overhearing, because one overheard anyway. I mean, in other words, it wasn't specially set up for the student.
Yeah.
The offices were not soundproof, and therefore nothing was thought about it.
Mm.
But I did have in those days one extremely good, what we would now call a supervisor, who ultimately became the head in that hospital and of some reputation.
Mm.
And I did learn a lot from her in terms of her attitude to the patients and concern about them and the time she was prepared to spend with them and so on.
Yes.
And these were largely new diabetics, very worried, very scared, in those days having to weigh everything. And there were, of course, quite a bit of financial elements involved, because in those days part of the job was how much of the things diabetics had to buy could they afford.
Mm.
And part of it was assessing them for the scales and the syringe and all the things they had to buy to do their tests with and so on. So there was that element in it too. Then I went up to Carlisle, where I later discovered that this was a kind of rehabilitative experience with a head social worker who was known for her ability to retrieve people who looked as if they might not pass.
Yes.
My report from Leeds was apparently gave rise to anxiety. As far as I was never told why, one didn't really know why in those days.
Did you see your report?
Yes. Not only did I not see it, but I didn't know what was in it.
I see.
But at some point, and I can't entirely recollect how, I did discover that one of the criticisms had been that I laughed inappropriately.
Yes.
And that was obviously seen as something that was quite unsuitable for a future medical social worker. However, what was interesting was the experience up in the smaller hospital in Cumberland, which was revolutionary after what I had found at the two other hospitals, in that quite early on I was invited out to lunch with the head almoner and her colleague at a cafe down in the town, that I was treated completely differently, almost as an equal. I mean, for those times, really very modern.
Yes.
And it was obviously an operation entirely designed to build up the confidence which I lacked, and I suspect the inappropriate laughter was related precisely to that.
Yes.
And that was really quite a happy time. And I did in fact all right, though what I recollect most clearly I spent a lot of time doing was writing letters of condolence to the bereaved.
Yes.
Because one of the practices in this hospital was to go through the deaths in the local paper every morning and pick out any ex-patients whom we had, who'd been, not patients of the hospital, but patients of the almoner's department. And then, if necessary, if it was thought suitable, write regretful letters to the relations. And I became quite expert at this, I may say, a skill which I think I have never lost. So perhaps not the most useful thing from the social work angle, but it's been quite useful in my personal life.
Yes.
Well, that was that. I passed at that point. And was then sent to...
Yes,
I think I went then to Halifax, where after 1 week I was left in charge of the department as a locum. There was one other girl there from Ireland, also a student, and between us we ran the department. I have not many memories of that. In fact, the only sort of memory I have, quite frankly, that stays with me from those days was a lady in late middle age rushed in to have a baby who didn't know she was having one. And this was my first experience of someone who really didn't know that they were pregnant. She was, I think, she was 49 or 50. I mean, and completely caught unawares. And my first job was to go out and buy the layette and all the things which she would need, because she was wholly and totally in every way unprepared. The fact that she was psychologically unprepared wasn't anything that came my way at that stage.
No.
One was just expected to, you know, to produce the useful physical things. And indeed, let us be fair, that was her biggest anxiety at that moment in time, was the fact that she'd got nothing to put on it, this bairn, when it came. I wasn't entirely thrown by this, because during my time at Leeds Infirmary, I'd worked in the maternity section and had done a good deal of rushing round, fitting people up from clothing cupboards and this and that.
Yes.
And certainly in those days, social work was nothing if not practical. Yeah. I mean, one was taking people out shopping and buying them clothes and fitting up the homeless.
Yes.
And it really was at that sort of level.
Yes.
At that stage, I recollect very little directly dealing with people's feelings, other than being sensitively aware of their feelings.
Yes.
But one wasn't, as it were, working in that area. This was a background to the more practical things that you were doing, which, of course, at that stage, the most practical, I suppose, was assessing what they were going to pay.
Yes.
Because these were the days when people paid.
Yes.
And there was assessment for appliances, assessment for almost everything.
Yes.
And this was the sort of basic thing one was doing, and considered that in the course of doing that you picked up other problems. I mean, obviously you rapidly discovered if people were in major financial or housing difficulties and so on. And as it was anticipated by the patients anyway, it wasn't in a sense, I mean, people today might think this would get you off on a bad footing.
Yeah.
But of course it didn't, because the assumption was that they paid the full cost.
Yes.
And you were seen as the lady who might in fact enable them to pay less than the full cost.
Yes.
They didn't start from the assumption that it was free and you were telling them how much they had to pay.
Yes.
So that you did start, in spite of all this sort of emphasis on money, you did start from a positive footing from that point of view.
Am I right in thinking there was some discussion amongst the others about how they could sort of ditch that part of the job? Sometimes I suppose they didn't
well,
be doing it. When, during the war, when ideas about beverage were being floated?
Yes, I think so. What I remember most will come better later on, which is the anxiety when the health service was set up.
Yes.
About how you would get your patients.
Yes.
But that probably would fit in later on.
Yes.
what I was then rather out of sort of current discussion for a while, because once I qualified, I did this locum at Halifax, and then I went to St Albans, yes, and did a locum there. And by this time, St Albans was a hospital for the London teaching hospitals to send their patients out to.
I see.
Yes. And the hospital I was at in St Albans was the hospital, the country hospital, as it were, for the Elizabeth Garrett Anderson.
Yes.
And what I mostly remember there was the really formidable women surgeons,
yes,
who absolutely petrified me. One doesn't know why they were such dragons, except that, of course, in those days, they were themselves, I suppose, I mean, to me they seemed rather ancient. I suppose in reality they were probably in their 50s or perhaps 60s.
Mm-hmm.
And one realised, you know, that they were really the vanguard of women surgeons.
Yes.
And that they'd had to fight every inch of the way,
yes,
to get where they were, and they hadn't lost the habit.
Yes.
And they really were paralysingly frightening to their staff, to the nurses, yes, to junior doctors and everybody.
Yes.
It was really an education in itself, that.
That links with an idea that occurred to me on Saturday when I saw Francesca Ward about, you know, it's sometimes said anyway about, I think probably not the generation before you, those before you, yeah, how ladylike they were, and from the upper class and so on,
yes,
and so on. And it suddenly hit me that, whether you think this is true or not, but it seems to me that unless they had been of that background, they'd never ever have made any impact in the hospital. It wouldn't have been possible to break in to the world of the doctors and the matrons and the sisters unless they had also been of the same social world.
I think that's true as far as the doctors were concerned.
Mm-hmm.
And in some hospitals, like Thomas's and the,
yes,
teaching hospitals, it would also apply to the nurses.
Yes.
Less so in local authority hospitals up in the north, like St James and so on.
Yes.
But it's where in some of those it could and did have the opposite effect.
Oh, yes.
Yes. Where occasionally even I was aware that they were seen as rather standoffish and superior.
Yes.
But I think it was partly, it was more an educational thing.
Yes.
That these were the people who got to university and so on.
Yes.
And then got into this kind of a career.
Yes.
Though, of course, there weren't the number of graduates in those days. They did tend to be social science, yes, diplomas.
Yes.
But there were a number among the better known heads of teaching hospitals and so on. Many of them were Oxford graduates, certainly in my day.
Mm. I mean, the problem, am I right in thinking that the problem for the almoner was showing that there were aspects to the job other than that, the assessing for, you know, payment. And that one of the things one had to do in establishing oneself in the hospital showed that that was
part of the job.
Something else as well.
Well, this was very hard coming. I think the days I'm talking about, in the hospitals I was in, perhaps the provinces were a bit behind London in this respect,
yes,
it was an intensely practical job.
Yes.
I don't mean just geared to the money.
No.
But it was getting them rehoused,
yes,
seeing they could afford their prescriptions,
yes,
seeing that they went to see their doctors, seeing that they attended child welfare clinics.
Yes.
It was really very much practical at the time I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you see, the next thing that happened I then got my first, as it were, permanent job following these two locums, which was in London during the Blitz.
Yes.
Now, during that 2 years, very little of what anybody today would call social work was done by me.
Yes.
Because I was in a central London hospital, the West London, and really, I would say 50% of the work was getting people down to the base hospital, such as the one I had been at in St. Albans. Now, here there were things to be done, certainly, because there was often quite a lot of trauma involved in sending people down to these hospitals, away from their families, and there was quite a lot of resistance on their part, and a lot of reassurance was needed, especially if it was children going and so on.
Yes.
And I was in the outpatients, so I didn't get too much of this, but a certain amount I did, because if people were put on the waiting list, then you had to explain to them they wouldn't be coming into the West London, they would be coming into a hospital 40 miles out in the home counties. And there were a lot of practical arrangements. There were arrangements about ambulances, about transport, about getting them there, the everlasting money again. But very little, other than what I would call having a lot of knowledge about resources, about where they could get money from, being in very good terms with a relieving officer, and I remember being somewhat disappointed at that stage in my career, because in a way it felt like a step backwards, because it really, there was very little scope for very much more, and then suddenly you were thrown in. And there was, you see, because suddenly you were at the same time doing outpatient clinics and things, and you'd get perfectly what today we would call good referrals, a problem, a family problem, usually medically related, obviously. You know, a child needing to come in and parents refusing, or this type of thing. There were some pretty grisly things too. I recollect that tonsils and adenoids in those days were done as outpatients. And, you know, there were some nightmarish things to be arranged with poor mothers with quite big children, you know, aged about seven, left to sort of carry them home, you know, in their arms. It really was really quite grim.
Yes.
But of course, the reality that stays with me in a way from those 2 years isn't to do with social work as such, but it's to do with the war.
Yes.
And it's very difficult for this not to take over.
Yes.
Because we all did fire watching.
Yes.
The Blitz was going on.
Yes.
And the particular job, you see, which I had to do at that time was to keep track of people. In other words, if they came in as air raid casualties, I had the not very pleasant job of trying to extract their name and address from them before the doctor got there with the morphia, because once they'd had their injection, I couldn't find out who they were. And if there was an incident, it was a sort of mad rush round with some great big buffer envelopes, which anybody who worked in the war would remember the number of, but I don't. They had a number anyway, and you had to rush with these and get the name and address, if you could conceivably get it out of them gasping, while the doctor stood literally with his syringe waiting for you to finish.
Yes.
So he could sort of ease the pain a bit, and in between you rushed around with cups of tea. But then you had to chase up and see what ward they were on and where they were going to be sent next day, because all this information had to be fed back to some police centre to keep track of people. Well, you know, was this social work? Not in our current terms. I mean, it was really, it verged on pseudo-nursing. and a good deal of spiritual comfort added in a sense.
Yes.
And this was all mixed up, you see. I mean, one of the things you certainly had to be was versatile, because on any one afternoon, you wouldn't know whether you were working, say, with the thyroid clinic,
yes,
on a perfectly ordinary almoner kind of job,
yes,
being sent for by the registrar to discuss what could be done about this old gentleman who lived on his own,
yes,
and really shouldn't be doing so, and what about part three accommodation or whatever.
Yes.
And the next minute, whoosh.
Yes.
And you were back on the other aspect of the job, you see, with, yes, with the casualties.
Yes.
And it was a very strange, strange life.
You were still in your 20s when you were...
Oh, goodness me, yes, about 24.
Goodness.
And you see, you fire watched three nights on and three nights off as well.
Mm.
I remember this actually did a great deal for cementing relations with other colleagues.
Yes.
In that the doctors and the sisters and things, I mean, if you were on fire watch with them and you,
yes,
were helping the customers, as it were, the casualties with them.
Yes.
You know, you didn't need to be establishing yourself through your social work.
Yes.
But you were probably, it was the wrong way to do it. I mean, I'm not recommending this, but it did have a side effect.
Yes.
That, you know, that would happen in any wartime situation,
yes,
in a sense.
It
that
oiled the wheels,
oiled the wheels for other,
yes,
things.
Yes.
Well, after that, after 2 years of that, I came back north for family reasons and took a single-handed job as almoner in sole charge at Doncaster.
Mm.
Now, this was, in the end, I'm bound to admit, was premature, because I had only 2 years' experience,
mm-hmm,
and very peculiar experience at that. And I had a difficult time at Doncaster. It was a new department, I may say, starting up with its first qualified almoner,
yes,
having had an unqualified lady before,
yes,
who was socially well known to everybody and lived in the district.
Yes.
And the first 6 months was spent living down my predecessor, whom everybody had adored,
yes,
and trying to get established.
Mm.
I was greatly helped by the head physiotherapist, I remember. And this introduced me to a totally different kind of experience, which I've never regretted, of working with minors.
Yes.
Because a very high percentage of the work was pit injuries and pit accidents.
Mm. Mm.
And it taught me a great deal, really, about attitudes in those days. I mean, the hazards of mining were considerable, but I had to come to terms with what was difficult for me, I think, which was the fantastic hostility to employers, which went to lengths which in a sense had negative results for the patients.
Yes.
Because, I mean, they would, their attitude was that they wanted the employer to pay, to be made to pay.
Yes.
And this was the time when the industrial injuries benefit was coming in.
Yes.
And you normally got this through your insurance.
Mm-hmm.
And I found tremendous opposition to claiming industrial injuries.
Mm-hmm.
They all wanted to go to court. I think it was they sued under common law.
Yes.
Because they wanted to the, what to them was the pleasure,
yes,
of feeling that the actual pit owner, the money had come from his pocket.
Yes.
And it was extraordinarily difficult to convince them that if they claimed industrial injuries in the normal way, their employer had still paid in towards this.
Yes.
They had a very simplistic approach, in a sense, to this. They actually wanted to see the chap, you know, in court and the money coming out of his pocket.
Yes. Yes.
It wasn't at all the same thing to get some money like your sick benefit at an increased rate.
Yes.
And this was still very prevalent at the time I was there.
It's kind of interesting that it's like, but it's got to be a direct transaction.
It was very interesting.
Yes.
Obviously, I learned both positive and negative things about life in a mining village.
Yes.
I mean, there was tremendous loyalty, tremendous courage. Mm. I mean, I hadn't at all realised the hazards. Mm. I mean, the number of spinal injuries. Mm. I'm not talking about big pit disasters of a magnitude. Mm. But I doubt if a day went by when I didn't walk through the casualty department or the orthopaedic department and see a black face and somebody on a stretcher, you know. And it was lucky if it was a leg or an arm injury. It was so often a spine, and immediately you knew you were going to have them on your books for the next 12 months.
Yes.
Now, an awful lot of my work then was much more approaching, quote, real social work.
Mm-hmm.
There was a lot of work in helping them with compensation claims, a lot of long-term patients trying to learn to walk again, patients with wheelchairs and so on. And I got very closely involved with the physiotherapy department, and most of the work I did then at that hospital was with the miners and the orthopaedic department, because this, although I was the only almoner there, I felt I had to start somewhere and get a foot in the door at, you know, and build up from, as it were, making a name and getting accepted in a specific area, rather than trying to cover the waterfront very superficially. In that particular department, I think it was quite successful. But I became increasingly aware that I wasn't making the impact I'd hoped for in the hospital as a whole. I think I probably, to be honest, underestimated what I was achieving at the time. Because in fact the department did continue and has grown, and it didn't just fold up when I left. But I think I was feeling very isolated. I had no colleague, no one to discuss anything with. And
do you have no contact with Margaret Roxburgh? No,
I'd very little contact with London at that time. So I did have contact with Leeds.
Yes.
And once or twice went over there to talk over difficulties.
Yes.
And after 2 years at Doncaster, I mean, it was secondary, but it was a very long distance from my home. I mean, I was doing this job and travelling 50 miles each way each day on trains, which could be anything up to 3 hours late in the evening, because they were the London trains, and one would arrive on the platform puffing at 5:15 to hear an announcement that the train from King's Cross would be 3 hours late due to a bomb on the line.
Yes.
And I would sit, never let it be told, playing cards in the bar with the miners and everybody else who was waiting for the train. And that was an education in itself too.
Yes.
The one perk, I must say, of that experience was that when you got a grateful patient, far from trying to give you a present of chocolates or something like that, I used to get little notes slipped into my hand giving me the tip-off for the latest race, especially if the ledger was coming up. Because they were great gamblers, and the sort of nicest thing they could do for you if they felt obliged to you was to give you a tip for the next race.
Yes.
I think at the end of the 2 years I about broke even. But I do remember thinking at that point in my career that some of my previous supervisors would suffer slightly from shock if they actually saw what was going on. Well, then great fortune came my way. I was invited to apply for a job at Leeds Infirmary as a senior on a staff of about seven or eight.
It's still the war, is it?
This is still the war.
Mm.
44 we're in now.
Mm-hmm.
No, wait a minute. 42, 44. No, we're not. 46 we're in.
Oh, just
so it was just after the war.
Mm.
And it's... The job was in the skin department.
Mm-hmm.
And this was a new department. Well, not new physically, I mean, was in a new block of the hospital, physically very brand new and shiny and lovely offices.
Yes.
And highly desirable, particularly desirable to me because my predecessor had been the same colleague that I'd shared my training with in Liverpool.
Oh, yes.
And I took her job over, as it were, from her.
So you did your interviewing in pairs?
That's right, the same lady. Now...
Will you say who it was? I didn't want to.
Well, I took it over from Mrs. Cuthbertson.
The lady who...
Oh, yes, from the colleague who I'd shared my digs with in Liverpool, who was going out to Australia.
Yes.
And I knew quite a bit about the job before I took it on from her.
Yes.
Both the satisfactions and the problems of which I was warned.
Yes.
The problem being the autocratic but extremely eminent dermatologist who ran the department. And really the question, I mean, it was made